Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Today we meet the playwright behind Playhouse Tulsa's new holiday production that runs this weekend at the PAC. Tulsa, a radio Christmas spectacular, takes us back to 1949 and radio station KMOK, Tulsa's fourth most popular station, that's feeling the heat from this new invention, television. So the station brings in a famous Broadway actress to headline a Christmas spectacular. And when that actress is incapacitated under suspicious circumstances, the plucky staff have to come together to make sure the show goes on. And thus, we have a comedy. Tulsa Radio Christmas Spectacular features Janet Rutland and Rebecca Ungerman, the latter of which has written three original songs for the show. My guest today is Cody Daigle, Playhouse Tulsa's playwright in residence and the playwright of the piece. He is a native of southwest Louisiana. His seven original plays encompass drama, a musical about the removal of the Arcadians from Canada, an Elizabethan piece, William and Judith, which Playhouse Tulsa performed last year to great acclaim, as well as an apocalyptic science fiction work, which premiered earlier this year. His work has been performed by the Arcadian Center for the Arts, New York International Fringe Festival, New Jersey Repertory, Off-Off-Broadway, and at several universities as well. Tulsa Radio Christmas Spectacular has its world premiere Thursday evening, December 5th at 7:30, with additional performances Friday and Saturday at 7:30, and Saturday and Sunday matinees at 2 o'clock at the Liddy Dungis Theater of the Tulsa PAC. Cody Daigle is my guest today. Cody Daigle, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks.
Now, as I understand it, you're going to be doing a new show that you've written called Tulsa Radio Christmas Spectacular. But originally, this production was, at one point, was going to be you doing an adaptation of L. Frank Baum's The Life and Adventures of Santa Claus, which Frank Baum wrote the Wizard of Oz stories, and he also wrote a number of Santa Claus stories.
Yes, and that was our original plan. We were going to be working with another entity in town to do a really big Christmas show with lots of kids in it and a really sort of a big budget and big cast. And that large project sort of fell through, and we started to think about what other shows we might like to do. And this was an idea that Courtney Sanders, our artistic director for Playhouse Tulsa, had we had talked about previously. And we returned to this smaller idea to sort of spend the holiday season with a couple of actors we really loved and just have a really good time.
So the premise is it's 1949. Mm-hmm. Radio is now, radio's at its height, but it, just like radio's ever been ever since, it's seen a new threat on the horizon, and that is the introduction of television.
Television, yes.
And so the fourth-ranked station in Tulsa is going to close its door unless they can get the ratings up and they decide to have a holiday spectacular.
Right. Like their main sponsor is deciding to move all of the money from radio to TV, and so they have this one shot to do this big radio Christmas spectacular that will impress their sponsor and keep their money and keep their doors open. And of course, in comedies, nothing ever goes as planned. So
exactly. So the kernel of the idea, did that come from you or did it come from Courtney, or the idea of doing sort of a radio drama but in a live performance sort of style?
The radio idea was mine. I knew that we talked about wanting to do a really sweet Christmas show and also something that would be funny. And the sort of the world of a 1940s, 50s radio seemed like a prime place to find sort of fun characters in crazy situations. You know, the show is live, so lots of accidents can happen. Things can go wrong, which would make for good comedy. And I was a big fan of the show Remember When, AMC's, one of like their first original series, which was Rupert Holmes wrote it, and it was set in a radio station. And it was a show that I loved when I was younger. And so I was like, oh, great, I can write my radio show.
And this is sort of, I assume it's a slapstick comedy.
Yes, it's big and broad, and the jokes are fast and goofy, yeah.
Now, have you ever written anything like that? Because, you know, there's
no.
A real art to doing something like that.
This is the first time I've done it, and it was a really scary, this was the hardest thing that I've had to write. It was a big challenge, shifting gears and trying to write jokes and keeping the pace up, and structurally it's more complicated than a regular play, and yeah, it was a big adventure. It's turned out well, I think.
Uh-huh. Stylistically, I mean, you have to be in the vernacular of the 1940s, mm-hmm. and I assume it's a lot of fast talking, a lot of fast switch sort of thing.
Yes, yeah, and comedy is really all about setup and delivery and structure and all of those things. You know, throwing all the balls in the air and then catching them all, and hopefully having it be funny while you're doing all of that. And I think it's we've done all of that. Thankfully.
Yeah. Now, I would think if you're not used to writing comedies, it's probably really important to have reads so you can get a sense of how the character is going to deliver the line, and just hearing it, because it, you know, what's funny in your head doesn't always translate.
Yeah, well, we were lucky in this case. We actually cast the show before
I wrote it.
Yeah. We had a conversation. I ran off a list of characters I thought might populate this play. And so Courtney and I sat down and decided, okay, well, this person would be great for this. Who would we like to bring into this mix? And we cast the show. Everyone said yes. And then I sat down and wrote for those actors, which helped out a lot because they're all very funny and they're all very talented and distinct people. So I was able to write for voices and rhythms that I knew ahead of time.
How important is that? Because I would think, I mean, that's not something a playwright often does.
No, this is the only time I've ever done it this way. And it was really a lot of fun. You know, you have these voices and these people in your head who you know personally and have worked with before. So you can write the things that they know how to do, the things they're really terrific at, and give them something fun to play with. And we got through the first read-through, and the show sounded like the show in my head, which was a great relief and also
how
delightful.
How often does that happen?
It never happens. This has been the only time.
Well, and of course, when you have the characters in mind, it's almost in a way you're writing sketch comedy in a way, except you're trying to create a piece that isn't sketch comedy.
Yeah, and they've also been very collaborative. There are things, especially in the second half of the show, which got finished once rehearsal began, that are informed by conversations with the actors about, hey, I'd love to do that, or, you know, I can do this accent. And so that works its way into the show and becomes a bit. And yeah, it's been a lovely collaborative process.
So we kind of set the broad outlines of the piece, but can you give us maybe a little more detailed synopsis of the piece?
Sure. It's 1949, 3 days before Christmas, and the wife of the radio station's lead sponsor arrives unexpectedly to check in on things and let them know that as of January 1st, they're putting all of their money into KOTV, which went on the air in October of 1949. So it's the newfangled thing in town. The plucky intern, Kate, comes up on the spot with this great idea. We're going to put on a radio Christmas spectacular that will weave together all of the in-house shows that the company does, sometimes successfully, sometimes less than successfully, into one big impressive thing to keep the sponsorship and keep the doors open. And she has an inspired idea to invite a special guest star whose reputation precedes her. It's one of the jokes in the show, so I don't give too much about her.
Yeah.
And, of course, chaos ensues. Nothing goes according to plan, and the company has to solve this radio Christmas spectacular the best way they know how. And
now, in this particular piece, you always hear the genre musical comedy, which we'll call them a musical, but the term is musical comedy. Mm-hmm. This really is a musical comedy. It's a comedy, but you got songs in it.
We do. We have Rebecca Ungerman is in the cast. She plays Edith Monclair, who is the visiting guest star. And she's composed 3 songs for us to use in the show. Most of them appear in the second half as part of the big radio Christmas spectacular. They're really fun. She's written her first Christmas song, which she's delighted by. There's a lovely ballad and a duet for her and Janet Rutland, who plays the lead actress at the studio in the show. So we get these 2 fantastic singers with wonderful reputations that precede them to sing in the show and be funny along the way.
Now, was that part of the vision, or did that just come about because you knew who you were writing for in the case of Rebecca? And you said, you know.
Once we talked about asking Rebecca and Janet to be part of the show, I was like, well, we can get them to sing. That'd be great. We can give them, you know, let them show off what they do really fantastically. And so we added that component to the show.
Now, as you mentioned earlier, you said you were writing the second act while you were rehearsing the first act. I mean, obviously, this was a pretty quick timeline then.
Yes, we've been rehearsing for about a month. We jumped in and we worked on the first act for the first chunk of rehearsal. I finished up the second. Then we threw that into the mix and got it on its feet. And now, you know, we're in the final stretch now.
Is that the way you like to write usually?
No. I've never written a show like this before. So it was intimidating in a way that other shows haven't been. And it was very instructive to hear the show for a few days in the mouths of the actors and understand the show's rhythms.
I think that would give you great insight into the characters.
It was really terrific. It was how really this, I actually dumped a bunch of material that was going to be in the second half and wrote a completely sort of new version based on just what I had listened to that first week. And I think it's much better for it.
Yeah. And while you're in the writing process and, you know, you're working on the second act, but you're seeing the first act, I would imagine that would give you a lot of good insights on how to improve the first act as they're rehearsing.
Yeah, and we did work a bit, shifting some things around and taking jokes or moments that didn't work, refining beats and those things. Most of the show has sort of gone untouched. That it worked really well once they got on their feet, and we've just done some refining. One scene took a sort of a big rearranging, but other than that, things have kind of structurally stayed pretty sound, which...
Well, that's pretty great.
Yeah, it's pretty great. It's a nice, not a bad way to work.
And I think for a playwright, you know, we should mention your works have appeared at a bunch of different theaters mm-hmm. around the South and the Midwest and some in New York mm-hmm. as well. But still, that's a different kind of writing. You know, a playwright, you know, you write a play, you send it off, and, you know, maybe it gets rewritten at some point. But, mm-hmm. but you know, you're doing like what... Saturday Night Live writers and what sketch writers or, you know, sitcoms and drama, weekly dramas on television are doing. It's like that sort of in the moment writing.
Well, that's my favorite way to work, really. I love being...
Are you a good deadline writer?
Yes. On this, you know, according to me, not this time. But for the most part, yes. I really like the pressure of solving things on the spot. And I think there's no more exciting place than being in the rehearsal room with a talented group of actors who are willing to make changes. And you can experiment with things and discover things with them. And, you know, there for one of the sections, I scribbled some lines on a page, handed it off to actors, and we worked it into the scene sort of right on the spot, and it improved it tremendously. And that's a gratifying way to work.
That is, I think it would be
it's
a lot
of fun.
Now, you mentioned Rebecca Ungerman and Janet Rutland mm-hmm. are part of the cast, but who else is in the cast? And give us a sense of how you saw these characters take shape as you're writing it.
Yeah, sure. We have Grace Stump and Jeff Goss play the sort of like ingenue couple. Grace is the intern and Jeff is the station manager whose dad started the station. Tony Schneider plays Benny, the lead actor who's got all the voices and does all the sort of the lead male actor things. Amy Nierman plays Luann. She's the musician and the eternal optimist. We have Sam Hunt, who plays the Foley artist. Denny Meredith Orr plays George, the writer who's been there since everything got started. That's our cast. It's a really terrific bunch of folks.
You know, it's funny you're talking about the writer, the musician. Every radio station at one point had those people. You know, I mean, it's for people of a certain age, they will know this instinctively. They grew up with it. But for most of us, the golden age of radio was long gone. And the idea that a soap opera, a musical show, of you know, a sketch comedy show would come out of a local station and local stations all across the country, that was the way
they
it was.
They would you know, write them on the spot and come up with things right away and sort of be this little repertory company inside a radio station. So... Yeah, it's really fun. You can sort of make a lot of theater jokes within this world too, because it's sort of a similar kind of community and a similar way of working. So,
my guest today is Cody Daigle, a Playhouse Tulsa's playwright in residence, and he is the author of Tulsa, A Radio Christmas Spectacular, which runs this Thursday through Saturday at 7:30 and then Saturday and Sunday at 2 at the Dungeness Theater of the Tulsa Performing Arts Center. Now, when you go into show business, you know, when you have a Christmas product, that's the gift that keeps on giving. If you write a Christmas song, you write a Christmas movie, it keeps coming back. Why did you set it in Tulsa? I mean, the idea of setting it in Tulsa where it's limited.
Well, we wanted to write a show that would things we cared about. We wanted it to be something new. We thought that would be a fun thing to add to the landscape of Christmas things, which are generally very traditional, and we see this similar things all year long. And we thought it would be fun to write a piece that would be made here and built here for this audience to get some inside jokes about Tulsa and just to have a show that spoke to this particular place. And even though it doesn't have another life, it has this life, which is a good one.
Do you think if it goes over well, you can adapt it so it can be done other places?
You know, it would be a lot of fun. We've joked that we would just take the name out and you could just insert your own
your
city
hometown
there, and I'd just write a couple of jokes, you know, adjust the jokes in the city titles. But I think even though it's specific to Tulsa, I think it's a show that would play well in a lot of different places, even if they weren't familiar with the inside jokes here.
Yeah. Well, and I have to admit that this is your second piece that involves radio that you've written in the last year or so.
Yeah. I had a show that was turned into a radio drama.
So 18 Victoria originally was a play.
It was. I wrote it. I was living in Philadelphia. I moved back to Louisiana early this summer, and I wrote it once I got home, and we did a reading, like a workshop reading of it. So it was written for the stage, but a local director in my hometown thought it would be a really cool radio drama, and got some folks together and some sound designers from Philly, and they turned it into a radio play, which is really pretty great.
Yeah. Now, are you a big fan of like radio drama?
I think it's really interesting. He sort of turned me on to this idea. He's a really big fan of
radio
plays.
The world is almost dead.
Yeah, but they're really terrific.
There's these small group of devotees who are basically
doing the BBC has a weekly podcast of the best radio drama. They're fascinating and really compelling, like an hour of radio theater, which is a lovely thing. Yeah. So
public radio used to do radio adaptations, some from the BBC, mm-hmm. but also in the country, but it almost disappeared. And now there's like this new subculture of radio drama. There's a group out in LA featuring, you know, very famous actors doing radio.
LA Theater Works.
Yeah, I know. And so it's kind of this is a little genre that just won't die.
Which is great. I think it's, you know, radio feels sort of like an antiquated form for a lot of people. But once you really dig into what some people are doing now with original radio drama, it's a very interesting way to experience a script and a story. We're talking about doing more, really, mm-hmm. which would be a lot of fun.
Now, the 18 Victoria piece, which is kind of like an apocalyptic piece, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes.
Yeah, it was actually had a performance at the New Orleans Fringe Festival
just a
couple weeks ago.
The radio version was produced for inclusion in the New Orleans Fringe Festival, and the actors from the radio production did a one-night reading of the show as part of the festival. So,
but really, the work was really created as a broadcast piece.
Yes, it was meant to be listened to.
Yeah, interesting. And you had nothing to do with that. I mean, they just adapted the piece from.
Yeah, I sent it along, and the actors started working. I didn't even participate in casting; it was cast. And I just got an email saying, "Here's who the actors are," and then I listened to the final product, which was really, really well done. It's sort of fun to work that way. It's interesting to hear other people work on your material see what they do.
Yeah, I mean, as a relatively young playwright who's, you know, you have, about a dozen, maybe mm-hmm. 15 works, dozen works in your output. Is that kind of different to sort of just hand it off and that's the end of it? Or is that how things work these days?
Oh, it's a process I'm pretty comfortable with. I like sort of not being a part of, I like being a part of the first production of something. I like being there to hear, to participate and say what I have to say about how the show should go. Then I really enjoy watching what other people do with it without me around, to sort of see other artists interpret a work that hopefully, if I did my job, is sound enough to communicate what it needs to on its own.
And is that the key, is to have explicit enough directions in the script that your intent is clear?
Yes. And then also just to leave room for people to be creative and do things that you might not have thought of, not to be too sort of anal retentive about it must be done this way. It's fun to watch other people mm-hmm. sort of bring their own experience and ideas to the table and create something new that you might not have thought of with your work.
Do you tend to tinker with your plays once they're done?
Yes. Yeah. There are shows that have been done, you know, to 2007 that I still periodically, if someone is interested in working on it, I'll go back and fix things. And, you know, play is never done.
Well,
it's never done.
Only when it's published.
Only then. And luckily that's not really happened a whole bunch for me. So they live in the world where I can continue to mess with them.
Yeah. Now, at some point, I mean, you know, you look at some famous tinkerers and it's like, you should have left that alone.
Yeah. Hopefully that's not the case.
You know, it happens in music, too. It happens in music. Yeah. Classical music, you know, you get, there are certain composers that would always go back and now there's like 14 different performance versions of it and you have to pick the right one.
And I think for a lot of the work that I do once a show gets worked on again is either clarifying something that I didn't
just a subtle brush.
You know, if someone has an idea, I'm willing to kind of give it a try to make it work for that particular company and that particular vision of the show. I like the idea of a play as a living thing. I'm not a fan of people who like, I wrote this and these are the words and don't touch them ever. You must do what I say. I think theater's a collaborative process. So the play is a living, breathing thing that can change and move as it goes through its life.
My guest today is the playwright in residence for Playhouse Tulsa, Cody Daigle. His new work, Tulsa, A Radio Christmas Spectacular, which features some songs by Rebecca Ungerman as a part of this comedy, which runs Thursday through Saturday at 7:30 and Saturday, Sunday at 2:00 at the Dungeons Theater of the Tulsa Performing Arts Center from Playhouse Tulsa. And he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, we talked a little bit about doing a slapstick comedy. Is that something you'd ever done before?
No. This was the first time that I've...
Are you a writer that likes to say, okay, you just went from like a apocalyptic piece to a slapstick comedy? Is it like, I'm really trying to look for a completely different setting for your next project?
Well, I like the idea of doing something I've never done and to try my hand at something that's new and different and will stretch my writing muscle in a new way. And this summer I wrote two shows that were really dark and sort of challenging those kind of grind pieces. And so this was, okay, well, let's tell some jokes and yeah, people bounding in and out of doors and things. Let's do that for a couple of months. Yeah, I like the challenge of something I've never tried or to keep the muscle stretched in new ways, which is good.
Now, earlier we were talking about tinkering with the plays. Are you like the week of the production, let's change a little line here, let's change a joke here? Or at this point, is it out of your hands?
I think we're going to cut one line. I think there's one sort of thing we're just going to axe. We took out a small section right before the holidays. Pretty much at this point, the actors need to feel like the show they know is the show that they're going to do.
Yeah,
we don't want to scare them too much, but I'm pretty much done. I just get to sit back and watch and have a couple of laughs, which is good.
Now, how do you handle a first production? Because obviously you're there at some point, you turn it over to people, but I assume once you get an audience, you're looking for reactions. And whether it's a dark play or a pretty broad comedy, are you taking notes on what people like, what they don't like? Are you getting a sense of the vibe of the audience, of how they're reacting to pieces, and you're making notes? Or are you just kind of just taking it in?
Well, for this piece, because we haven't... Normally, I've had the benefit of either a previous reading or a workshop or something where I've had a chance to play around with a show in front of an audience before they're paying for it. This is not the case. Our first audience is opening night, which is a little scary because we have no idea what we have until we open. So I'll be taking notes and thinking about refining things and getting a sense of how it works. I know how it works in the rehearsal room. I'm curious as to how it works in front of an audience. I think they're the same. I feel like they're the same.
Is that always the case?
Sometimes I have no clue what we have. William and Judith was a case that I really didn't know what the play was going to do for an audience until I heard it in front of them for the first time.
Yeah, this is the piece you did with the Playhouse Tulsa, I guess, last year.
Yes, and spring of 2012.
Yeah, and this was William Shakespeare, his sister, Judith.
Yes, yes.
Judith, and William's sort of at the end of his creative string, and he appropriates something.
Yes, yeah, it was sort of like a riff on the Virginia Woolf idea of Shakespeare's sister being a playwright as well, and the whole authorship controversy. They sort of came together in this play, and we did a reading of it here the year before we did it, and I had no idea what we had until it was up in front of people, and it was a good surprise. This show, I feel more confident about what it will do for an audience. Mm-hmm. Which is good. It's a good way to go into opening night.
Yeah. I think when you have a good surprise like that, it has to give you a lot of confidence for your writing chops, too.
Oh, you know, after that first read of William and Judith, I thought, oh, maybe I can actually do this. This is great. Whew, thank goodness.
Now, you've relocated here to Tulsa. Now, you've been all over the place. You lived in Philadelphia for a while, lived in New York for a short amount of time.
Yeah.
Lived in Lafayette.
Yes, I'm originally from there. I'm originally from South Louisiana. Lafayette, we're sort of like the center of Cajun country down there. So.
And you actually have a great relationship with a theater there, because I know they've done most of your pieces.
Yes, there's Acting Unlimited. AUI is the company there. And I do a lot of theater free and audience work with them. Mm-hmm. And they've been sort of the incubator space for a lot of my recent plays, which is a wonderful thing to have. It's a small 50-seat house that they have. So it's a great place to try out something that you have no idea if it's going to work. And it's a very intimate space.
And you're a hometown boy, so they said, that's okay. You keep working on it.
Yeah, it's always that, which is great. No one's going to tell you it's terrible whenever you're the hometown guy.
Well, now you've moved to Tulsa now. Mm-hmm. Is it the idea that you're going to try to do at least a piece a year for Playhouse Tulsa?
I certainly hope so. I'm the work I've done with Playhouse has also been as an actor, because I'm an actor too, and I'll be directing in the spring. So Playhouse has sort of evolved over the last couple of years into being a really great creative home for me. I really love working with this company, and that was what enticed me to finally make the move out here. And I'm really happy that I did. Yeah, it's a great home.
Now, earlier in our conversation, you said originally there was an adaptation of Frank Baum's The Life and Adventures of Santa Claus. Mm-hmm. Is that still in the cards at some point down the road, do you think? Or is this something you're really interested in adapting, or you have other things in mind?
I don't know. We've talked about it. I know that, you know, the years book up very quickly once new projects come along. And I know that Courtney and I have been talking about a new play project for next year that I think we're both very excited about. And we'll probably pin all of our new play stuff on that as that goes. So
somewhere down
Santa Claus may have to wait another year.
Now, are you a playwright that likes to go back and forth between writing original work and adapting, or is just adapting something you do when a call comes?
Well, no, I really like adapting. It's a really fun task.
I think you would learn a lot about playwriting in adapting material.
You really do. And it's just like this really lovely balancing act of telling you, you know, you're translating like a novel or a short story into another medium. So you're trying to honor the source material, honor the medium that you're translating it into, and trying to honor your own impulses as a writer and the stories that you're good at telling, and to balance those three things and still make an evening of theater that will satisfy everyone is, it's like a great puzzle. It's less daunting than an original piece, because an original piece, you have no idea what's going to happen. So adaptation's like a fun writer puzzle.
Yeah. And of course,
it's great.
There's strength in the story, you know.
You know the story will work, right?
Yeah, but you have to honor that and make it mm-hmm. translate.
And you know what works in a novel on the page of a novel doesn't always work on stage. We did Little Women for summer stage this past summer, and so that's a massive book. We condensed it to a 2-hour show and tried to get all the pieces. But it's an interesting puzzle. How do you tell this story so that people feel like they've seen Little Women, but also make it a satisfying play so that they leave also feeling they haven't just had a stage translation of the book, which is a tricky thing to do.
Which might take a day too.
It took a little while to do.
And I think that's the key, is to keep getting that essential story arc, which mm-hmm. probably helps hone your own storytelling.
Yeah, when I never say yes to an adaptation unless it's a story that I would tell otherwise, that I understand it or really respond to what the core of the story is. If I don't, then I don't usually say yes to it, because then I probably won't serve the story well. It won't fit my instincts as a writer or the things that I do well, that I think I do well.
Well, we'll see the results of your mm-hmm. most recent bout of creativity with Tulsa, A Radio Christmas Spectacular, mm-hmm. a new comedy by my guest, Cody Daigle, which opens Thursday night, runs through the weekend at the Dungeness Theater. Cody, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much.
Playwright Cody Daigle, Playhouse Tulsa's playwright in residence, speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. Playhouse Tulsa will premiere his new comedy, Tulsa, A Radio Christmas Spectacular, beginning Thursday evening at 7:30, with additional performances Friday and Saturday at 7:30, Saturday and Sunday at 2 at the Liddy Dungeness Theater of the Tulsa Performing Arts Center. For ticket information, call the PAC at 918-596-7111. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. If you miss one of our recent programs, they're available online anytime at publicradiotulsa.org. You can search for Studio Tulsa and look through our archives for past programs or part of today's. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.